director, writer, editor, and any television you do about everything. Over here to my right is Jamario Washington. He is our director of photography for season two. We'll touch on how the show transformed from season one to season two, but he was really the driving force, the reason it looked so different and drastically different from season one to season two. He was also a producer on the show. Then we have Byron Hardy. He's the lead actor, as you can see right here. He is a producer and a writer and post audio and everything we needed he did. And his character was such a fan favorite in season one. He was in a supporting role that he became the lead in season two, which is, I don't know how common that is in television, but just because his character was so unique and he played it so well that we had to elevate his character, and also Ashley Lee in season two. And then Yvonne Williams, she is our set designer and actress. She came on season two. In season one, she had a very small role. In season two, she jumped in as set designer behind the scenes and also saw her whole role elevate some in a supporting role. And obviously the reason we're here is because our set design was nominated for a Daytime Emmy, which we are elated for, especially considering that, you know, seeing our name alongside the Hollywood heavyweights is such a humbling thing. And I have to give, these are the folks that make it happen, and also Nadira Shakir, she was our AD and our lead actress. As you can see, we all wear multiple hats, but these folks are the reason that we were nominated and the reason we were able to elevate an indie series to that level and compete with these other shows. So real quick, my elevator speech. So I'm born and raised in South Dallas, went to the University of Texas for film school, worked at ESPN for 5 years. Three of those years was at the Mothership in Bristol, Connecticut, where it was extremely cold. and then I moved to Austin to help them launch their first ever college network, which was Longhorn Network. After 2 years there, I jumped up to back home to the Texas Rangers as a creative director, won a couple regional Emmys, got an MBA at night, and went and got me an MBA job. That lasted a year, got fired, got laid off, was in the unemployment line, driving Lyft, and I had the idea for Washed, and it was initially called Quarter Life Crisis. And that's because I was going through a mini quarter life crisis on myself, and that I had won two regional Emmys, and I had 2 degrees, I felt very accomplished, and here I was, right? Nothing wrong with driving for Lyft, but it's like, wow, where am I at approaching 30? So I wrote a show about it, and it started gaining steam, people started to relate to it. We had a squad of about 30 people, cast and crew in season one. Some festivals selected us. We won a quick award too, maybe. And then for season two, I tore it all down. I was like, this is good, but our process isn't going to get us to great. So I tore it all down, and that's when we entered Mario and Yvonne and Hardy in these very significant roles. We built the team from 30 people to 150 people. We added some fantastic actors, which you see in season two. I encourage y'all, if y'all haven't seen, see the big jump. And these guys just made it sing. So, yeah, and the whole city got behind us. Even Reebok got behind us. They were a sponsor in season two. We had some local sponsors. And yeah, it was just amazing. And we held a premiere right before COVID, luckily right before COVID. And 500 people came out to see the first 3 episodes of the show. Did I miss something?
No, except for it's all Dallas cast.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so, sorry. Yeah, it's all Dallas cast except for Ashley Lee. She drove up on the weekends. And also give you some perspective, because we are indie and we shot on the weekends, so we can only shoot Saturdays and Sundays. So we shot for 5 months. And there was actually one day, which was a 25-hour day. And the reason it was a 25-hour day is because we couldn't afford to come back to the Airbnb. And so we started at 6 a.m. on a Sunday and ended at 7 a.m. on a Monday, just so we could get all the scenes shot. But yeah, entire Dallas cast. The soundtrack is mostly Dallas.
It got a little broader.
Yeah, in season two, we intentionally broadened out to the rest of the nation because we wanted to draw in some of their, you know, that network effect. Season one is all Dallas except for probably my favorite song was from a guy from Oklahoma, his name is Alta. Anything else on this?
And All Dallas Crew. What's that? All Dallas Crew, too.
Oh, All Dallas Cast and Crew, yeah. It was a mixture of, like, experienced folks like Jamario and first-time folks that just wanted to get their feet wet in film. So it was my job to, you know, help them get up to speed and, you know, perform at a level that would be satisfactory for a show that you can see on Netflix or Hulu or anything like that.
Can you talk about the city, and also maybe this bleeds into the set design, but I was amazed at how much of Dallas we saw. The skyline looked amazing. The scenes in the park where you could see the skyline in the background, phenomenal. I'd love to know how y'all picked your places and then how that bled into your set design, because I think we feel Dallas in the enclosed spots as well.
So that was intentional from season one, was make Dallas a character or make Dallas look like LA or New York. Like, it's a big, massive, beautiful skyline. And at the end of this award nomination is scenic design, right? So that's a part of it, and we really wanted to make Dallas look as beautiful as it is, and make it look like a metropolis, you know?
Yeah,
I think, you know, too many times you see on TV, like, normally you're watching any kind of technology, sports stadiums, right? Sports stadiums, or, you know, it's like a couple of downtown buildings. There's so much good, really great scenery in the city of Dallas, you know, whether it's bridges or landmarks that people in Dallas know about, that people outside of Dallas have never seen before, you know. There's someone from outside of, well, yes, not from outside of Texas, it's just not one city, but, yeah, someone from outside of Dallas, and you know what they think of, and it's, you know, it's the stadiums, it's Reagan Tower, it's, you know, it's a miracle, and there's so much more to Dallas, and I think Jared, who was the drone operator, I'm gonna say, but he was a drone operator, he did a really good job of capturing some of that scenery that hasn't been beat to death.
I like the shot going down to the front of the building. Mm-hmm. You can see the glass in front of it. Yeah.
I think what, and just to
kind of
piggyback off of what Jerry and Cardi said, I truly think that we allow people to remember how beautiful our city is. And I've had numerous friends and families tell me, I forgot they have such a nice skyline. Like, wow, I didn't even know that part is so, you know, so nice. I'm gonna go there, you know. So I've had so many people tell me that to just so that we can put that into a show and for everybody to see, not even just Dallas, but beyond Dallas, so they can see. Just like, you know, Jared said, we want to make sure that they know Dallas
can be
big too. You know, we can be up there
with
you working everything.
You know, and it's probably like growing up in South Dallas, I would come up 45 on the rare time when you come downtown. And you come up 45, wow, this is gorgeous, right? So that probably seeped into my creativity just from my childhood.
Jeremy, I want to ask you about all the office buildings where you have offices. How do you get those? And how do you get in there?
Painstakingly. That's probably the hardest thing. Yeah, Yvonne can talk about designing those sets, and Mario too, because they were like conjoined at the hip. So those, like, getting locations is one of the hardest tasks, especially indie filmmaking, because you don't have a location scout and a location team.
Or location money,
right. So yeah, it's really just about finding locations that kind of fit the vision. And so in season two, you have four different worlds. That's a challenge for Yvonne and Mario, is that you had a home life, an office life, a club life, and a street life, right? So we have all different looks. So when you're watching the show, it's almost as if you got like four different shows going on at once. So we wanted locations that created subtext and said something without saying it, right? So really it was just kind of finding locations and then finding the person that can say yes. So we got a lot of no's, like a lot of no's.
Yeah.
But it was just about fighting through those no's to get to one yes.
I mean, a lot of access stretching too.
There's a lot of no's through, you know, locations, but also me and Bond going, hey, this may not work. So
I think that what we did that was really important was finding these locations that fit everybody's personalities or what we were trying to portray at that time. So, you know, with Smoke, luckily, at the beginning, it was supposed to be a garage.
So what? I had that lined up.
One of our characters was supposed to be a mechanic.
Yeah, so when we found that thrift store, we're like, well, we can make the back. Technically, we can fix the cars in the back, and then inside, you can bring the thrift store, you know, doubling it up, pulling the people, everything like that. So once we're inside there, you know, we just implemented things in each location. That was the big thing that was important, was that, you know, we didn't have money to every location that we chose, that we'd be smart about it. And then within that, live off the world that's already in that location, and then just implement those elements of those characters in that location. And the big thing was important for me and Vaughn to talk. And, you know, I would send Vaughn pictures and go, hey, let me do this. She'd go, well, I kind of like this better. And we'll kind of go back and forth the locations that we could scout. And it wasn't a tech scout, it was literally you just go look at the location, or Jared send me a picture and go, hey, what do you think? And I'll go, all right, well, we can do this, and this, and I'll send it to Vaughn, and Vaughn go, all right, well, I'll bring this stuff in. So we had to be smart about, you know, the budget and what we
get to. Is that why you had to shoot on the weekends? Nobody was in there?
Well, no. The reason we shot on the weekends is because our entire crew had 9 to 5s.
Oh, okay.
So that 25-hour day I told y'all about, we left at 7 a.m. and Hardy went to work. Like, he went to a 9 to 5.
Right. Yep.
Same for me. Like, I had to, you know, get back to working for clients for my agency. Yvonne.
Full-time teacher, and I was in grad school.
Wow.
While teaching
and in grad school.
We had, like, the amount of impressive people we had, and doing this on the weekends, and they had 9 to 5s. So Ashley Lee, this is her favorite picture right here. We wrapped her one night at 3 a.m. and she had to drive 4 hours to Houston.
Wow.
That was kind of like the stuff folks don't see behind the scenes. We're very proud of what you see on the screen, but behind the scenes, just the scrappiness and just the relentlessness. Because we shot for 5 months, and to keep people together is a testament to the cast and crew just like buying in and just muscling up. It took a lot of willpower.
Where are you doing a lot of your stories from? Where'd you pull a lot of your stories from? From the driving lift?
No. I have some good ones, though.
That's a different show.
Season one, it was really about pulling from personal life experiences, stories of friends, like just relatable content, right? In season two, as I was saying earlier, we revamped every department. So we built a writer's room. We had 3 men, 3 females, right? In addition to that, we had a consulting room. So once we got done with the draft, we'd throw it over to a consulting room, they would tear it apart, send it back, we'd redo it, right? So in season two, you have 4 stories going on at one time. We needed all of those life experiences from every single writer and even the consulting room and just all these ideas. So because the show Washed, it's short for Washed Up, it's about 30-somethings chasing their dreams. And because when you turn 30, whether it's real or not, you start feeling this anxiety, or you had this dream in mind that was going to be fulfilled by 30, right? I was going to be on my second NBA contract. I was going to be married to Beyonce. I was going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30, and then I wake up at 30, and
she's still with us.
And she's still just a little power. So yeah, like those stories are plentiful, and our writers. I think Yvonne, even you had a good idea, like after a table read, right? We just talk about the show so much that everybody would chip in ideas, and then I would try to pull them together into a
end of day of too.
We did a lot of on-set rewrites, or you know, just planned ad-libs, so to speak.
The beautiful thing is that we're all like in our 30s, except on, I think, but like the rest of us.
Are you
Did you send it?
Next year.
So, like a lot of us, kind of, you know, movie shooting and stuff like that. And one scene was like, I'm talking about my credit score. Right? I was checking my phone, I was like, oh, my credit score went up.
And literally broke. That's how we start to say.
I don't even think he knew about it because we were unloading gear and his phone went off and I was like, somebody later, something, he's like, oh, my credit score just went up. We fast forward like about a week or two later, Hardy and one of our other characters, Jude, played by Tony Williams, they were walking and they're getting a scene and his phone goes off and Jude's like, is that showing? He's like, no, my credit score just went up. This guy lost it.
So I need my Reddit writing.
But yeah, like a lot of that stuff is live action. I mean, just live bullets. And you got 10 people touching the script. Like you get to explore a lot of ideas. You know, some work, some don't. And you get to the final draft, the shooting script, and you know, it's got a little bit of everybody's DNA. So it's, you know, not just a single person. Or we had 3 people in life, so I'm saying season 1. But you just get that vast perspective. Everybody's got their 30 experiences. You know, somebody's doing something that just looks like an old person on set may end up in the scene. Yeah. It literally could have been anything.
And then some actors like the script is just a suggestion. So
those are normally the actors I end up with.
Right. And as a director, I'm open to actors bringing their whole self to set and bring their ideas. And if I don't agree with it, I'm like, well, we'll shoot it your way, and then we'll shoot it my way. And I'll pick whichever's best in post. All right? Which gives them an opportunity to. Yeah, and I'm
not all the time.
Not all the time. He is also the editor, so sometimes it's just. He knows what he's going to do.
But I'm okay being wrong if it's better for the show, right? Like, you serve the show, you don't serve egos.
I don't think I want any of those, actually.
You answered about where the scenes came from, but what was so specific about these four lives? Maya, Club Life, is it Club Life, Office?
Yeah.
What was so specific about those?
So, the four characters we had, so Maya. Maya was just coming off a breakup, and so being single in your 30s, you see a lot of people talking about it on social media. It's hard. Dating is hard in general, no matter what age you are. Right? So we wanted to explore that a little bit, right? The office, being a woman in corporate America is very hard. Being a black woman in corporate America is even harder, right? And I see that with my wife every day. So and even with Ashley Lee, she's a black woman in corporate America, very successful. So we wanted to highlight that, right? And then Amber is the aspiring comedian, and she's getting up in their age, and she hasn't made it, about up there in age, she's in her 30s.
She hasn't tried it,
but also she's not very good. And you know, sometimes you have friends that are rappers that nobody wants to tell them, by 36, you have this. Right? And then our probably our most dynamic story or character is our intellectual drug dealer. This guy, maybe you want to expound on your story.
Yeah, I think, you know, Eric in season 2 just kind of feels left out because everyone else gets to have their drink. He's kind of stuck in the situation that he got himself into. You know, he's been dealing drugs for a long time. He wants out. He wants to be able to go have a life because he's either been, you know, his entire adult life, he's either been selling drugs or in jail for selling drugs. And he wants to be done with it. I kind of played it as just a person who is just really sick of their job.
Good job,
right, it just so happened to be a drug dealer. But I mean, you know, we all kind of get to that crossroads where this, you know, this job we knew wasn't going to be a career, but we hung around too long. And now we're looking for the way out. I think that's how I approached Eric's story for season 2, where it was more about just wanting to be able to go off and explore and have a life and not be tied to this thing, this dangerous, like, you know, it's at some point, the clock's going to run out on that, you know?
And also, somebody pointed this out that I didn't even think about. I always call him the intellectual drug dealer, but he's really, somebody's like, I don't think he's had a philosophical drug dealer on television. So his character is really smart. He's quoting Maslow's hierarchy of needs. he's explaining Sword of Damocles and how that pertains to being a drug dealer. And so he's this very highbrow drug dealer, so you can see that there's much more to him than selling drugs. And I always put it where he lost the zip code lottery. Where some people are born in Highland Park, he was born in a neighborhood where he was forced to do what he had to do. And, you know, having grown up in the hood, you know that though they're great people, just sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do to get by. And then now that he's kind of elevated, like right. I said, he's just sitting the job.
Yeah, it's just like, I think it was a Dark Knight Returns line, where Anne Hathaway's character says, when you've done what you had to do for long enough, you'll never get to do what you want to do. And that's kind of where he was at his crossroads, where he's like, yeah, I'm in my early 30s, I'm still doing this, I gotta get away. Or something bad's gonna happen. Or I'm just like, I'm not gonna be as good at it because I don't wanna do it anymore.
Can you talk a bit about the added elements, like the news interrupting every once in a while? I love that. The virtual reality that we get to see in it is really crazy. I mean, there's so many extra elements to the show that really put it to another level. I loved how much extra we had opposite these great stories. A, where did some of that come from? And you talk about social media, the sex tape stuff was genius. The way you cover social media is pretty brilliant as well.
Thank you. We're random, so sometimes, we are very random. And so, and me and Hardy have been friends for 2 decades, right? And so we have a vast variety of interests, right? So that kind of seeps into the writing. So we might go off into a virtual reality, kind of just Black Mirror type thing. And even Yvonne was acting in that scene. Which was a great job by her, because when they had the goggles on, there's not actually them playing in the goggles. They're thinking what the script is saying and kind of going off that.
And I recall when you were injured that day, right?
I was injured?
You were injured the whole season.
I remember we had to prop you up a certain way or something like that.
She was just uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think it was just the way you were sitting.
So those
stories, they come from like, because these are everyday life characters. This is a slice of life type show, right? Mm-hmm. So that, I think that's a real thing. Like, the idea for Virtual Bay came from a writer that was initially in the writer's room that didn't continue with us. He had the idea, he's like, well, let's have the girls go to the club and kind of judge them. We did that in season one, kind of, which was a secret. And I was like, well, what about, and somebody's like, what about dating app? And I was like, that's kind of boring on TV. And I was like, well, what if we put them in virtual reality dating, right? And then it just kind of started coming together. I had the idea, Ashley, one of the lead writers, she wrote that scene. And then when we got to post-production, me and Hardy tag-teamed it. He found the kind of look, and he hates me for this. He was actually supposed to try to edit the scene, and I got so excited when he sent me the look. By that afternoon, I had sent him a mock-up. And he's like, I was going to do that when I got off work. I was just so excited.
The disadvantage is
bad. But that scene, I'm glad you brought that up. That scene is so hard because it has to execute on multiple levels, right? The writing, the acting. Then on a separate shoot, we have to get these actors to go into a green screen and just do what they do. And then we have to put it together in post, and then audio design, all that stuff had to come together. And that scene could fail easily, and I think it went over really well.
I think when to kind of back up on what you said, if we're thinking about the things that are in the show, you mentioned the news broadcast and the virtual reality, if you think about it, dating is evolved from what it has years ago, and it's going to continue to evolve. So we have to kind of think of different ways that we can branch out and still captivate the audience, and I'm sure know that's something different than versus, you know, getting your phone out, which we've seen shows do before. You know, oh yeah, I'm on this new app. So I'm trying to think, you know, further and bigger so that it can still have the same effect. Because it's just reality. We're trying to make people know that you can relate to these characters. Even if you're in your 30s and you're dating, like, there are other ways that you can still see who's out there. And even for like the news, the news broadcast, the breaking news, something happens, you can just be at home watching TV. You can even be, sometimes you're not even thinking of it, but then when somebody can say one word, they can just remind you, just like Maya might come up, you know, and it might bring you back. And that's just how people relate to these characters.
And when you think about something like that, that portion of like episode one, you know, when you think of something, it seems to pop up everywhere. Like my wife said, she's like, I want a Range Rover. I don't want a Range, too expensive. Anyway, she's like, I see Range Rovers everywhere, right? Everywhere, right? I didn't really care to see them before. And with like the sex tape you mentioned, that, like,
it's a thing. It's such a thing.
OnlyFans is a thing. Like, it's a big thing in arts.
Yeah, that was kind of
last year, it kind of blew up.
Yeah. Right. but and that was just kind of it. Maya's story really here is that she was trying to get to a certain type of relationship. She wanted to get married, have kids, have a wife, and fans. She's been in a relationship with Mark 5 years, and now the whole dating landscape's different. There's so many things out here that, you know, she doesn't know about. And I think the OnlyFans thing came up. Was the end of the writing process. We're trying to figure out how to get out of here. You know, what to do to turn, you know, Trent into a supreme scumbag. And then just kind of started being a thing that came up. It's like, first it was just called a premium account. I was like, no, let's just go all the way and call, you know, do the OnlyFans thing. And those graphics give us a good, it gives us a good opportunity to put in some Easter eggs and then stuff and things like that to entertain ourselves when we're watching this thing, particularly in terms of posting. But it's a thing that can happen. I think it was right around the time that law got passed too, that, you know, made that an actual sex crime. And so, you know, we're trying to figure out how to handle it from there, but, you know, it was very topical.
The hard part about like doing social media from a production standpoint is like a two-party in the weeds, but like our character goes live on Facebook and there's people commenting, and post-production, you have to make every comment. Like you had like
every commenter.
Every username, every profile picture, every comment is made, right? And so that's painstakingly made, you know, over hours.
But and that's what I said, is another just opportunity for him to entertain himself. With the middle of episode 9, where all of the messages and things are popping up on the black screen, there is some hilarious stuff in there. Like some of the pictures of crew members that, you know, give it to accounts, or it's like, there's your cameo. And just some really goofy stuff that we may have just talked about joking at the bar after, and it ends up there. A lot of that stuff is just, you know, from couch having to entertain himself. doing all of those graphics because he did them all himself.
In your characters,